Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton.
Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Darkness, my old friend.
There it is, folks. Another wild card berth, another brutal exit. Chargers one and done in the playoffs. 32-12 off the back of four Justin Herbert interceptions. Unable to find any offensive rhythm as the Texans' defense ran rampant. You are listening to the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. I am Andy. I'm with Alan Jack. And gents, look, there's a lot of emotion in this one. But I think it's important before we get stuck in to send our thoughts and prayers to all of those affected by the devastating wildfires over in the surrounds of Los Angeles and in California. It's clearly affected a lot of our fan base and by connection, us too, in a way, maybe the team. But look, being Aussies, we've from a distance experience some pretty devastating bushfires over the years, so we really feel for all of you guys over there, and we praise the first responders and everything that they're doing to help out and minimize sort of further damage. So yeah, thoughts are definitely with everyone, and I think it's important to bring that up because yeah, we might be 16,000 miles away, but look, human to human, Chargers fan to Chargers fan, it sucks. It's really tough for you guys. So, look, Jack, mate, the season for the Chargers now put to rest. It was an impressive first season under Jim Harbaugh, 11-7.
Yes.
It's easy to throw the toys out of the cot when you lose a knockout game. Probably a lot easier to do so in the fashion that it was on Saturday at NRG Stadium. Yeah. And this next 45 minutes or so has a real chance of just turning into a bowl of spaghetti. So let's try and keep a little bit of... cohesion.
Spaghetti like QJ trying to catch a football.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I've got my
risotto. Real gluggy risotto was QJ catching a football.
Instead of beer, I'm on the preseason already. This is my creatine and protein shake, and that's how I'm now have to.
You're going to play offensive line, are you, Jack?
I tell you what, I'm so close to, you know, going over there and trying out an open tryout for the Los Angeles Chargers. No. Andy, I think you hit the nail on the head. First year under Harbaugh. And as far as I'm concerned, this is the bottom of the barrel. So this is the baseline. This is the bar that we now need to get over every season. And if I'm looking at it objectively, we made the playoffs with a roster that most people said would get anywhere between 5 and 8 wins. We had 11 wins per PFF. You look at some of the numbers and I just sort of are quite astounded, really. You know, offensive overall, they've ranked us 15th. Passing, we're 3rd. Pass blocking, we're 12th. Receiving, we're 18th. Run, we're 29th. Run blocking, 21st. Not great. But I tell you what Minta has done with the defense, overall 3rd, run defense 7th, pass rush 12th, coverage 2nd. Insane numbers, but it doesn't take away from the disappointment what we saw against the Texans, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, my mindset is this is the bar, this is the lowest we're ever going to get, and this is the lowest we're going to get. It's already far better than what we've experienced in the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, my view on this is almost nothing could have made this season anything other than an overwhelming success. You've gone from 5-12 to 11-6. And as you just said, Jack, we weren't expecting it. But this was kind of close. And after the game, I put up a poll on our Twitter page. Guys, Bolt fam, was this worse than the Jacksonville debacle? We had 594 people voting, so not a small sample. 55.6% said yes. Now, there's probably some recency bias there. We got some good comments about it, but why don't we start the conversation there, Andy? What do you think about that? Because it wasn't pretty, but was this as bad as Jacksonville?
Yeah, look, I think there's elements of yes and elements of no. I've pushed a lot of what transpired during that game well out of my cue ball head. But when you hold a lead of 27-0 or, you know, 27-7 at halftime, to be, you know, polite on our side of the net, that hurts a lot, right? We had this, you know, young defensive guru as the head coach and the defense sucked. And that was disappointing in its own way. And then you look at this and a team that, as you guys have both said, maybe overachieved to a degree or surprised a lot by winning 11 games, three over the high mark of that range, Jack, that 5-8 win range. And the guy who bails us out, bails the team out a lot, did just about the opposite and played, in my mind, one of his worst games as a Charger. And unfortunately, it's in a playoff game. He's now 0-2 in playoff games. And it's all the outside noise that comes in that I think affects why you would believe. And recency bias is a great thing. You know, you stub your toe 5 minutes ago. That, in the moment, hurts more than a broken arm that you suffered 2 years ago, right? So, it's all the noise from outside. Herbert can't get it done in the big game, in the big games. He's overrated. He's been overpraised. That sort of stuff really just, that's vinegar in the wound. So I see it both ways. Look, the way that, without getting too far into it, the way that the defense was playing, forcing turnovers of its own, would have been nice to have that complementary kind of football, but he didn't get it. He had a bad day. Everyone has a bad day.
And there were echoes of the Jacksonville game. In that game, four turnovers for the defense in the first half, but a little bit different. Offense couldn't do it. Jack, I invite you to add any remarks on what Andy's had to say.
Well, before we get into the Herbert debate, is this loss worse than the Jacksonville loss? Arguably, no, not even arguably. I'm going to say, from my perspective, no way. The Jacksonville loss was just painful. And what
Let
made
me just interrupt
it worse?
You. Is that because it almost ruined your friendship with Hal?
There was a high possibility.
We've had
that,
lower
though.
Points than that. We always have back strong.
We have. I mean, the guys punched me in the face before after trying to help him out on a night out.
Oh,
and
that's
yet,
true.
And yet, I still was there to put him in the car on the way home. So, let sleeping dogs lie on that one. No, because after the Jacksonville loss, I really didn't see where we go from here. That was one of the first times that I questioned Brandon Staley and can he actually overcome this? He wasn't an experienced coach. It was one of the worst losses in NFL history. The roster was in this weird state as well. The reason why this loss is not as bad is because I know for a fact Harbaugh has been there before. Ortiz is there. There seems to be more organizational cohesion. I'm sort of trying to make the feelings lesser. I was very upset that we lost the game. But I don't think it's as bad as a Jacksonville game.
Yeah. Okay. To round that out, I think the best two comments we got in response to this, which essentially mirror my view, one said it's about the same level of disappointment. The Texans took advantage of every single thing the Chargers struggled with this season. Herbert having his worst game ever was not something I saw coming though. And that one was from Home Run Halos, I should say. And then Tyler Cunard said, it's not worse, but I think people were much more willing to ignore our flaws and child's play of a schedule because of Jim Harbaugh, myself included. The Herbert implosion hurts more than the loss to me. I think they're both right on the point. We shouldn't be surprised because it's literally everything that we struggled with against the better teams on our schedule happened again. Whether it's pass protection, stagnant play calling, not targeting running backs, not having answers and adjustments in the second half, all of those things are pass protection, Jack, failing to pick up stunts, unblocked pressures. All of that came home in the most important game, and maybe we all got lulled into a false sense of security because, as we said, the last three games of the regular season, guilty as charged. Sorry, that's a different podcast. We scored 30 points in all of them. So, Jack, did you want to take us somewhere next?
Yeah, I just need to talk about the pass protection because that's everyone's, and I'm sure a lot of people have read on X how, you know, and people are heaping on Justin Herbert. He had his worst game of the year. Of, is it his worst game ever? It possibly could be. But the first thing that I always look to as well, how much time did he have? How much pressure was he under? Just some numbers for you. Now, PFF have a really wonderful little stat that's called allowed pressure. And so that's pressures are a stat that a QB can own. And this kind of the numbers that I'm about to read you considers where the offense allowed pressure. So during the regular season, right, Herbert was only responsible for 7.6% of pressures on himself. Okay, so he's under 10%. That's pretty good. This is where things get interesting. The line was, obviously, that's where a lot of the pressure comes from, was responsible for 82%. This is where things are interesting. Left tackle and right tackle, respectively, 16%, 14%. Left guard and right guard, 21%. Center, 17%. Okay,
Jack,
so
just to interrupt, are you talking about season long right now or the weekend game?
No, this is season long, right? Yep. So this is season long. So we know that Slater's a stud. We know that Alt's a stud. We know that the two guards and the center are terrible, right? But just how good was D'Amico Ryan's defense? And these two probably got away with a little bit of non-criticism because everyone's talking about the interior offensive line, right? The pressures on at the game against Houston, Justin Herbert was responsible for 16% of the pressures on him, so over double of the regular season. The left tackle and right tackle, respectively, were responsible for 21%, and the left guard, 21%. Center and right guard, funnily enough, sitting under 16%. Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting, when you put those numbers onto what we saw, I believe that D'Amico Ryan's, this offense, and Greg Roman, not only did Herbert play well, but they were completely and utterly overwhelmed. And that's something we've said on this podcast ad nauseum. This offensive line, interior especially, is just not there. Justin Herbert was overwhelmed. Roman was overwhelmed. Alistair, what did you see from Greg Roman in terms of, did he change, did he not? And how do you put those, how do those numbers put your, in your context, sort of shift your thinking, or do they solidify your thinking?
I'll start with the second question first. Perhaps those numbers in this game are less surprising because the real strengths of the Texans defense are Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter on the edge. Very tough players to stop. And those corners, Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, were clamping down our receivers so much that I think some of those pressures are going to be on Herbert. I watched time after time. He's standing there. He looks at his first read, clamped. Second read, clamped. Fuck. Third, fuck. Pressure. Step up into the pocket, sacked. So, and we all know Roman does not use typically a lot of dump off passes. He's happy to have three man routes, seven guys in on protection. So when the first few aren't open, there's not a lot you can do except for succumb to the pressure. And that's exactly what he did. On Greg Roman, it was just so obvious, guys, that D'Amico Ryan's was very aware of, familiar with the Chargers' tendencies. They're going to run the ball when it's second and short because they want to move the sticks. So we're going to play single high safety and have eight men on the box and play man on the outside. We know they run the most play action, or almost the most in the league. So we know they take those shots all the time. Be predictive, have a guess about their personnel. And on those reps, you're playing quarters coverage, you're playing two high safeties, you're backing off your receiver slightly, guys aren't getting open. And it was just the tail of the tape. Couldn't run the ball, gave up on the run. And this was the recipe we talked about, Andy. If you let this pass rush tee off on Justin Herbert, you're not going to like the results. What we saw, as we've said, is at least one of the worst games of Herbert's career. Interestingly, PFF graded him higher than CJ Stroud. And I think part of that is to do with the non-interception Stroud had, where he threw bad throws, but we didn't capitalize. And maybe a couple of Herbert's interceptions arguably being the fault of the receiver or a prayer ball in junk time. But there's no getting around the fact that Herbert had a bad game. It's how bad was it? Worst ever, one of his worst, who really cares? He played shit in a playoff game, and he has to live with that all through the offseason. Earlier, I'll throw one back to you, Jack, and I want you to come in too, Andy. The comment you made at the start about the fires was appropriate. We haven't said anything on Twitter about that. We thought we'd let that sit for a while, but we're clearly thinking of all our listeners who are based in LA and the nearby area. Is that an excuse? We've just seen the Rams play today and win. They're also from LA, but yep. We were told, Jack, the team got 50% of their practice reps in because of the air quality. What do you think?
Okay, well, let me throw some numbers back at you then, because digging in, I wanted to have a look at where Herbert's time to throw was, and we know it was poor at 2.8 seconds, but I didn't realize that Stroud was actually less than that. So Stroud was actually throwing at 2.72, and Matt Stafford today, who put up 30-odd points, threw at 2.44 seconds, right? So what I'm seeing there is the difference between a Greg Roman being able to adapt and shift and get the ball out early for yards versus a Bobby Slowick and a Sean McVay. Now, I'd put McVay and Slowick in a completely different stratosphere to Greg Roman. Did it make a difference? The fires, that's so hard to tell. I don't want to speculate because I don't think it's my place, and I don't think it's really our place to speculate on who's been affected and who's not. I don't think that's appropriate personally.
We should say, as an example, Jack, for listeners who don't know, our wide receiver coach Sanjay Lal, on one of the nights in the lead up to the game, him and his family had to evacuate their house in the Palisades. That's going to interrupt your prep for the week, and we don't know. We just don't know about the other players.
Yeah, but I still don't think it's fair, because they wouldn't want us perhaps thinking that they're not professional enough to overcome that, but at the same time, we can still have empathy for the fact that their preparation may have been, and they're not going to be, you know, making excuses themselves. So I just think that perhaps it is what it is, and Roman just didn't have anywhere to go. That's the long and short of it. Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, Jack. It's really hard to be able to quantify how something like that can affect you. It's obviously a lot of background noise, to be succinct with it. But I'd like to think that you could use it as an excuse if you were a first-year offensive coordinator, maybe even like Kellen Moore, you know, first year with the team, preparing for a defense that you haven't seen before that season, and all that sort of thing. But I don't know. I'd like to think that with Greg Roman's experience with multiple different teams, playoffs, all that kind of stuff.
It's not a new tree of defense. This is from the Robert Saleh, San Francisco, D'Amico. That's not an excuse for Roman. I agree.
So look, as unfortunate it is, and it's awful to hear about Sanjay Lal and his family, but I don't really think that you can say that it's an excuse. It's obviously weighing on the players and the team, but one thing when you talk about the Rams being affected by it as well, one thing I would have liked to see is exactly what the Rams did, and they played for their city today. They represented their city, who's in trouble, and needed to band together. And I just felt that the Chargers didn't, and it was a little bit disappointing for me in that sort of little pigeonhole of the optic of it, if you will. Sort of doing what you need to do.
Yeah, I thought the defense, to be fair, did play pretty hard, but the offensive performance was woeful. And Jack, it is true. Like, here are some facts from the game. The first interception to Quentin Johnston, where Herbert rolls out, they take a play action shot, underthrows the ball. Jim Harbaugh comes out and says that shot play was called from the wrong hash. You're meant to call that on the left hash. From the right hash, it makes the throw much further for Herbert. Ergo, underthrown, picked off.
Terrible.
Still shouldn't have thrown it. QJ could have done more to bring the ball down, but what is Greg Roman doing? The fourth and two play, critical play on the game. You've got QJ, who's a 6'3" man, running a whip route that you will usually see guys Ladd McConkey size run. Like, yes, QJ is extremely athletic and sinks his hips well for a big man. That does not mean that's the optimal route to have him run on Derek Stingley and be where
Stingley monstered him too. Absolutely monstered him.
He forced the route short, 100%. Yeah. And look, at the end of the day, QJ dropped it anyway. So,
But Al, can I ask you? So, is this, did Roman just, and did Roman and Herbert just disconnect? Because his A dot, he led Wild Card Weekend in A dot, right? So, this is Herbert. He's at 12.6. That's got to be one of the highest games ever in his career, and the next closest was Bo Nix at 11.7. So That is incredible, right? Was it just baby out with the bathwater and we're just going to go, go, go? Was it the fact that they were jamming the receivers? Herbert just had to hold, just had to throw it. They had to get into the intermediate to at least create some separation because they weren't getting any at the line.
Yeah.
How do you, like, because I looked at that and went, whoa, okay, we wanted higher ADOT, but possibly not 13.
I think that puts to bed the idea that that stat is particularly important and correlates with wins. I don't think it does. Mahomes is one of the lowest in the league. They're the best team in the league. Yes, you don't like anything. You probably don't want to be the extreme outlier for most of the time, but it is a poor decision strategically, unlike Sean McVay and Slowick, to think, okay, this defense plays man, they blitz. We're just going to go bombs away, even though our receivers can't get separation. Instead of all these other outlets that help your quarterback, where are the throws to the running backs? Where is the quick game that Bobby Slowick utilized? It's unimaginative. It is stubborn. And maybe if you're being kind to Greg Roman, you would say, look, part of it is personnel driven. And with this personnel, it was always going to be hard. But I don't think he put his players in a good position to succeed. I don't think he brought his best when his best was needed. I don't think Herbert brought his best when his best was needed. Andy, did Jim Harbaugh bring his best when his best was needed?
He took all the blame for Herbert, right? So you could say, no, he didn't. I don't think anyone did across the field, maybe with the exception of a few of the defensive players. But, and look, at the end of the day, they weren't perfect. Still, they only gave up 18 points, but they allowed Bobby Slowick to get CJ Stroud back in the game. Was Harbaugh the best? No, I don't think he was. I can't really say that one guy was, you know, superior to anyone else. Any particular moments?
Maybe Andy, I'll make it a bit easier for you because that's a bit of an airy fairy kind of question I've asked. Maybe do you buy into this? Harbaugh brings a kind of a conservative vision to how he wants to play football. We saw some conservative elements in this game. The decision to take the field goal to go up 3-0. By contrast, the Washington Commanders went for 5 fourth downs in their game. They're like, if we're near the red zone, we're just going for it because we want 7 points. Harbaugh didn't do that early. Jesse Minter, before the half, is going prevent defense. We'll let them get a field goal. We don't want a touchdown. The special teams play tight. They've never done that. That's two errors, a blocked field goal, a blocked punt. The kicker didn't know the rules terms of trying to...
That's the big one for me. When you talk about a few weeks ago with the fair catch kick, got it in one this week. those like sneaky rules and, you know, maybe the blocked punt, the blocked point after attempt and how you deadball that is not as sort of niche as the taking the penalty and being able to kick the free kick. But Dicker didn't know the rules. Dicker, you know, they said on the broadcast that even his bat down was illegal. So I'm assuming that if he'd caught the ball, at least it stays there and maybe there's a penalty that it's added after the kickoff, after the ensuing kickoff from the score. But there's confusion and you saw Harbaugh losing it. And I think part of him losing it at special teams on the sideline after that play was a little bit of frustration at himself that he hadn't, you know, taught that or made that sink in. The conservatism.
Or he had and he couldn't believe they fucked it up. It's like we talked about this Saturday morning at the hotel. I don't know.
Oh, wait, was I telling my chickens that? I don't know. he's like, best Bessie the Bantam. She'd know that, you know, she knows that rule. it's an interesting one. The conservatism definitely bled out onto the coordinators, onto Roman and to Minter, as Al's expressed. A big thing for me, talk about turning points, and obviously the Dean Leonard interception that was counted, I guess, with the first interception that Justin threw. Was it the second field goal that we kicked, third and less than one, probably would have been 90% of a yard. And we go for a running play. Fisk, I think, lost as well as Sawyer. Zion Johnson pulls across, pretty much tackles Joe Alt off his block. and we lose yards ending up fourth and third. We've got a 6'6" quarterback. Why are we not going QB sneak on third and one? We're not going to lose yards. And Al, we were talking offline about the percentage of QB sneaks that resulted in loss of yards. Couldn't find it because I just don't. I think it would be less than 5% of
Nexist, as my Italian grandfather used to say.
Nexist. That's right. So that's a conservative approach. Go for that. Get closer, and then look, if you end up fourth and inches, then you know you can either try something funny or settle on a field goal if that doesn't work. I'll just chop on because we were talking about how Bobby Slowick adjusted, and this is a knock on both. We talk about Roman not adjusting to get the ball out quicker from Justin's hands. He was getting pressured within 2.5 seconds from the Texans' pass rush. What Bobby Slowick did was give quick outs. That's why Stroud was getting rid of the ball quicker after, I think, their third possession. He went 13 of 16 for 223 yards and one touchdown on in-breaking routes. And the amount of completions in the soft middle of the field, 101 of Nico Collins' 122 receiving yards came in that area. And it's just wild. And then you've got, I could tee off on Christian Fulton for just being undersized and weak and sloppy. But
I'll say, though, Andy, this is the same story. And then, Jack, I want to hear what you've got to say on the Harbaugh question too. The issues that the offense has had all year were exploited. Jesse Minter's defense really has two issues. Run defense has been a little bit average, especially when Denzel Perryman's out of the lineup. It happened again. Because they play cover four or cover six on early down so frequently, there is a soft spot in that defense. We saw it with Brandon Staley. It's the same friggin' defense to an extent. In breaking routes, especially off dagger concept, quick strikes over the middle of the field. Because you've got four corners back, and if you've got Christian Fulton playing in an outside shade, you're relying on your safety to the inside of you to help break on anything that's a dig or a slant. And we had this problem all year, Andy. Nico Collins goes off, 8 targets, 7 catches, 122 yards. We sat here and discussed Mike Evans killed us, T. Higgins killed us, Drake London killed us, Cortland Sutton had his moments. It's the same style of wide receiver. They're the same style of routes in breaking. Playoff games heighten and put your weaknesses under the microscope. Both sides of the ball failed, Jack.
The conservatism washing down onto coordinators is something to watch more for Minter than it is on Roman. And I don't say, that's not me to say that Roman's not conservative. I think that Jesse Minter played a system with the players that he had in front of him and made the appropriate changes to be a top five defense. Greg Roman, throughout the whole year, and this is now, hindsight is 2020, has played an offense with players that he wished he had, not the players that he actually had in front of him. Now, this is complete speculation. Jesse Minter's a young gun. He knows what he wants to prove himself. Greg Roman is older. Greg Roman is a great friend of Jim Harbaugh. The conversation could be, Greg, you've got 3 years with this offense. You need to build from the ground up. This is what you need to do. Whatever you can get this year, make some changes and things. Don't go too crazy. Just you've got to build the basics with the players that that we're going to have long term. Surely they've got that plan. Minter, the style of his defense is that, you know, that system where it's relatively easy for players to play. We've seen players come in off the street and do pretty well as well. So I think we've got to be, people have come for Minter and say that his defense fell apart. It's context specific. I think that's bullshit.
Yeah. The defense they got were balling. Pressure on Stroud too. They did
the defense were balling and the offense shat the bed. And so all of a sudden you start to question yourself, go, oh, we just need to stop him. When you get the ball back, slow the game down. And that's when Ryans goes, ah, we've got you. See you later. So that's where I kind of land with that. But this conservatism from Harbaugh, I'm hoping is just a little bit of a first season. I'm going to see where I'm at when I've got far more trust in Greg Roman actually fucking running a play that goes past the sticks, but goes past the six on fourth down, then maybe I'll start to do it a little bit more. Because that is
Andy, would Josh Palmer have made a difference in this game? Because that's something that's not discussed. I'm not saying will it have changed the result, but is that a limiting, is that an explanation for what we saw?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's far more trust in a wide receiver three, if we are going to label Josh Palmer that, than Herbert has with DJ Chark. I think QJ's average depth of target was something like 17.6 yards. We've discussed ad nauseum for the ways where QJ excels in short, yards after catch kind of areas. Once again, we're going for him where he loses track of the ball. In some cases, the ball's underthrown, can't get back to make a play at the ball. So, yeah, I think we would have used QJ in a different way, and Josh Palmer might have excelled where QJ didn't. So I think there's definitely an argument to say that it may not have affected the outcome, but I think it definitely would have helped Herbert throughout the course. One thing, Jack, on the defense starting out well and then falling away. Bear in mind, probably in the last 3 or 4 weeks, the defense hasn't really been on the field beyond 20 minutes. The way that we've controlled the clock, they're on the field for 35. That fatigues. Point. Losing Perryman's a big one. Cam Hart went out of the game too. So you've got Dean Leonard coming in for him, who made an incredibly athletic interception. That was such an awesome play. An awesome play to dance with his feet on the sideline. But those little things, they all add up for mine. I've got a question for you, Al, just regarding Greg Roman while we're flogging him to death. How do you see the sort of progress that he's made over the course of the year? And how confident are you that it's on an upward trajectory? So I'm talking like there was sort of... I'll just let you take what you want.
I'll be honest with you guys. Before this weekend, I was in the camp of Greg Roman deserves year two. Let's see him with year two and a better, more talented roster, especially because the last 3 weeks have been excellent on offense, right? This performance was so bad to make me question that, to make me think, is this guy fatally flawed and he's never going to get it done in a championship game? He just doesn't have the answers. He's 5 playoff games as the Ravens and Chargers OC. You found this stat too? 64 points, so 12.8 points per game, 11 turnovers, maybe that's not on him, but whatever, 12.8 points per game, and that's with Lamar and Justin Herbert as his quarterbacks from 5 games. Now, Giro apologists, supporters, what have you, will say, well, he's come really close. He's made a Super Bowl with the 49ers. Give this guy a top 5 offensive line, not a middle of the road offensive line. You'll see he'll play the way he wants to play. It's going to be good enough. But you asked me, have I seen anything like clearly improve over the course of the year? Not especially. The things that were always...
Alistair, no. You were one of the big ones a couple of weeks ago to say that Greg Roman has taken... Yeah, I know I was going to to jump in is that he's made Herbert one of the best play-action passers in the league. Is that where you were going to go?
It was exactly what I was going to say.
Well, there you go. So see how it feels when someone
like
jumps in and
you haven't
finished?
Talks over people when they're speaking. You put your hand up.
You took the words out of my mouth, Teach. That is the one thing...
Must have been while you were kissing me.
Good pipes. Better than you are catching the gully. Even play action, which has been so good all year, in this particular game, 7 of 12, 97 yards and a pick.
Yeah.
And then all the other things that have been problems all year remain problems. So what does he really hang his hat on? It was Herbert's had probably his best season. Herbert just had one of his worst starts. The offensive line kept failing with stunts. Too much pressure allowed. Can't run the ball. Can't block the run. Receivers can't get open. Maybe that's not Roman's fault, but he's not scheming them open. So let's finish with a question that I'll throw now to you, Jack. Do you still hold the view that you stick with Greg Roman next year because give him a go with more talent and keep the continuity with Herbert? Or do we just fucking cut this thing now and find someone else who's more modern?
Well, let's talk about this more talent question. Show me another offensive line in the league that has 3 first round picks on it.
Yep.
There might be one, there might be a couple. I can't have just thought of it now. Granted, Bozeman and Solier, not that, or Pipkins definitely not. Pipkins is a 3rd round. Ladd McConkey, 2nd round pick. QJ, 1st round pick. Justin Herbert, 1st round pick. So you look at that and go, well, what's going on here? Because if Greg Roman can't teach three first-round picks on an offensive line to be better than 30th or 29th in the league per PFF, geez, is that down to Devlin and the coaching? Is that just having the wrong personnel? It's the complete wrong type of talent? Surely coaching's got to be something to bring that up. I mean, unless it's so completely wrong in terms of size, in terms of ability, and he's asking them to do something he's never, ever done before, your Matlocks and your Fisks and things like that, I don't know. I would say bring Greg Roman back, and the only reason why I say that is because I don't want Justin Herbert to learn another playbook. The guy's he's got a fucking encyclopedia on his arm that flaps about when he's playing. He's probably weighed down by it. That's why he's throwing picks. So, yeah, I'm super interested to see, and we'll talk about this on our roundtable show with Kyle about what they do on the offensive line. But the excuse of talent is one that is wearing a little bit thin for me, and because Jesse Minter has brought in guys and they've excelled. So, G-Ro, you said I've given you one season, and I said you're on notice a couple of weeks ago. I'm giving him until week 6. In 2025, and then I'm going to tell you to either get the fuck out or well done, you're there. Because I tell you what, there's got to be some improvement.
That means we're going to be back for another season at TDU, Andy. I'm pumped.
Yeah, sweet.
There you go.
Just signed the dotted line. Jack, I think you make a good point about, you know, having the draft picks, you know, the high draft picks, but where you look at what Mint has been able to do with younger guys especially is how I take that with the two fifth round picks this year, Cam Hart, Tahib Still. They were drafted while Minter and his scheme was in place.
True,
and
true.
Sure. Rashawn Slater, Jet, Joe Alt obviously was picked for, you know, a body to mold. But Zion Johnson, maybe not a scheme fit. QJ, different regime.
Not an NFL player.
you've made a really good point of Greg Roman trying to, and it's square peg round hole stuff, right? He's trying to do things with, irrespective of the skill sets that he has in front of him, he's not adapting to using the bodies. He just sort of tunnel vision, this is what we're going to do. Either you learn it or you're out. I am certain Greg Roman will come back, and even if he were to be fired, Jim Harbaugh has a style of football, and we'd just end up hiring an OC that, you know, aligns to that sort of philosophy anyway. So, yeah, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, but we'll probably have Greg back. And, hell, maybe we draft those interior offensive line guys that are to a T what Greg Roman wants, another running back, dual capable tight end, all that sort of stuff, because it's really patchwork with Fisk and Matlock. Even though, geez, credit, just while we're here, what a catch by Tucker Fisk. Geez, I would have lost money if you said he's going to catch this. Not a chance, but...
Let's not talk about Will Disley's targets, but that's a whole other story.
But we need to talk about Ladd McConkey, right? Because we haven't. It's been quite... Like the one shining light
40
of
minutes
the
without
game.
Talking about the third highest receiving...
That is...
You know, Jack, it's my only... I've got positive negatives on offense. It's my one positive note to go with the 11 negatives on debt.
What the hell is this guy? What the hell is he? And I blasted him for not being a contested catch receiver. This guy's doing everything. This guy is doing everything. He's taking hits. He's taking contested catches. He's going for 86 yards or whatever it was. He's getting open. He's playing hard. He's going down at the right times. This guy's so much better than what I thought he was going to be. Incredible. And I tell you what, I lost my mind when that touchdown went. I thought it was, you know, we're back in this, and then there was the blocked extra point. But
you
Ladd
found
McConkey.
A good stat, Andy. Do you have that one to hand for McConkey? I've got it somewhere if you don't. His the 197 yards that he accumulated.
I sort of coughed that out when Jack was getting all excited. Yeah, third highest ever receiving game by a rookie in playoffs behind Calvin Johnson and I think Demaryius Thomas. So that's some pretty fantastic company. And Yeah, it's awesome, but it's like the Texans did, highlighting all of our flaws. 242 net passing yards, 197 to Ladd McConkey, and 45 to the rest of the jobbers. The other six of them, horrible. And Will Dissly, man, we've almost like blown your dick this whole year, and you come out and drop the ball on 2nd and 19.
You've been playing the trumpet with it.
Oh, it's more of a piccolo. But like the drop on 2nd and 19, and then what are you doing with that interception? Man.
That's finished the game. That play, remember we've just gone 15-yard completion McConkey, 19-yard completion of McConkey. I think the score's only 26 at that point with a quarter left. Yeah. And then that on a first down, three of Herbert's four picks for what came on a 1st and 10. That one was just a...
Can you imagine what Ladd McConkey's thinking after playing with Brock Bowers last year? And he's sitting in a receiver room with Tucker Fisk, DJ Chark, Darius Davis, Will Dissly, and these guys like, yeah, we're... And he's like, what the fuck is this? And he's going, I'm just going to have to put the whole team on my back and go, what, he had almost like 80 yards of run after catch, man. The guy's a freak, and Will...
Superstar.
Like he's going to be... I mean, if he can stay healthy, and he's doing all the right things, I feel, that to stay healthy, he needs to build his body up over the next couple of years. But hopefully he doesn't lose that speed. But God, I tell you what, watching a little bit of All 22, focusing on the line as much as I was, looking at the body English that he has and the will to get open, I can't remember ever seeing a Chargers receiver have that amount of will in the route. Keenan was polished, don't get me wrong. Keenan was exceptional, one of the best. But I've never seen a guy dig in so much as Ladd McConkey. So if he becomes a leader in the receiver room in year two, in year three, he's the guy. I have very high hopes for what influence he can have on the team, not just on the field, but off the field too.
Nice.
For sure. Well, we're not going to see DJ Chark in Chargers uniform next year, surely, after the Instagram post mere minutes after the game. Shout out to my bud. Been along 3.5 months as he posts the photo of a joint on Instagram. Like, you get given an opportunity and you're that fucking thick. Blows my mind. And that just speaks volumes. Speaks volumes. Like, just do it and don't put it on social media. Like,
yeah, not hard, is it? Guys, I want us to end, unless you've got other stuff to say after it, with something that maybe we've skirted around a bit. I'm sure a lot of listeners would be interested in our views on Justin Herbert. Okay. I know we've discussed Justin Herbert. We've said how it was one of his worst games. You know, there are stats out there. Of course, he had 3 interceptions on 504 regular season attempts. Ends up with 4 interceptions on 32 playoff attempts. That's unbelievable. Open question. Does this game give you pause about Justin Herbert and whether he can take this team to a championship in the future?
Andy, do you want to go first?
Does it put a lid on the potential of the team? My biggest concern is the mental impact that it has on him, and the panic and the pressure and all those sort of things. We've seen him do it with a style and aplomb this year. We know that he's got it physically. He's played through injuries. He's a warrior, as Coach Harbaugh says. But it definitely, it's two playoff losses. This one, as far as Herbert's concerned, far worse than the Jacksonville one. That was an all-round clusterfuck. But it's two playoff games. And I think all of the things that we've spoken about are contributing factors and impact his, you know, mental awareness and feel for the whole thing. So I don't think it puts a limit on what this team's capable of with him at quarterback. But this
is a guy who almost never plays poorly, ever. And it just so happens that in the two playoff games, I would say he played below average against Jacksonville. It definitely played poorly in this one. But you're saying, I'm hearing you, 2 games does not a sample make, Kyle D. But is there anything, like, has it shaken your confidence? Has it shaken your confidence, Jack?
Has it shaken my confidence about Justin Herbert? No, but I think I've asked myself more questions than I ever have before. I would never, ever trade Justin Herbert. I'd never even fathom that. But listen, for me, you got to look at the numbers. And wins are not a quarterback stat. Let's be honest there. And to be honest, I've seen Justin Herbert win more games by himself than lose games because of him. So in that, if I'm being objective about it, I go, fair enough. There was digging into the numbers and looking what the Houston Texans did to him, looking at the game again, he didn't have much chance. However, the media storm that's going to be around him is going to be, where does he sit in the top five? Because, you know, Josh Allen lost a lot of weapons this year, playoffs, playing really well. Mahomes lost a lot of weapons. He's got an aging Kelsey. Who knows what he's doing at wide receiver? He's in the playoffs. You've got Lamar Jackson who's playing. Does he sit in the top five? You know, where is he? Is he better than Matt Stafford? It's really hard, and it's really hard as a fan not to get sucked into that. But all I hope is that Justin Herbert doesn't get sucked into that. He can insulate himself. But he's not beyond reproach. He needs to be held to account, just the same as Roman, just the same as all the other players. But unfortunately, when you get paid $50-odd million, you are the leader of the team, you set the tone, and you come out and do that, you look a bit scared, there's something worrying, a little bit more is shouldered on your shoulders. Sorry, it's put on your shoulders. And that's just how it is. And two games in the playoffs, he can't get it done. His teams can't also get it done. Let's be very clear there. Okay, so it's not like the team played really well and he couldn't do it. But mind you, the defense in both games, Jacksonville, this one, played pretty well. They couldn't pull it together. Is there a common denominator? I don't know. Alistair, where do you sit?
I'll come to that. I think to build on what you've just said, two things to note. One, his cap hits are escalating, not diminishing. And I know we all just assume this is the worst offense he'll ever play with. I know Daniel Jeremiah said that. That puts a bit of pressure on Hortiz to nail these draft picks, because the expectation of $50 million per year as a cap hit is you're actually carrying guys with you. It's not that your offense is going to get better and better around you necessarily. As we've seen with Mahomes, as you just said, Jack, it can get worse and worse sometimes. The other thing I want to respond to is, yes, I agree that wins are not a QB stat in specific games. But I do think over the course of a career and a sample, QB wins does kind of get you in the right ballpark, generally speaking. It is the position that has the most influence on the game. And so far in his career, that he's played on a lot of bad teams. And we do, I mean, for people like us who watch every game he plays, we always think, hey, man, he's been elite. He's awesome. This is the time for him to reflect on what I can do better. Is it pre-snap? Is it pass protection, calling out audibles? Is it arm angles and layering my throws with better touch? Probably, possibly all of those things.
Use your legs.
Use your legs. We didn't even discuss that. What's zero rushes, and Stroud arguably changed the game with his legs. Other than that ridiculous busted play, the other thing he did was start to scramble. I want to see more evidence before concluding somehow he's a guy who's always going to choke in the playoffs like a Dak Prescott, only because there are enough guys who we thought that about, who are kind of showing that that wasn't correct. Started with Peyton Manning and some players.
Lamar Jackson. Matt Stafford. Yeah, good pick. Well. Yep.
And Stafford. And I do generally think this will be one of the lesser talented offenses that he will play around, even though I just said.
Perhaps not lesser talented, Alistair. The caveat is that it's the offense that hasn't been built in suitable. The image that they want. Mm. Yeah, suitable. Mm. Let's say suitable. Yep.
Yep. All right. Yep. We are at the 50-minute mark. That feels good. Yeah, that felt therapeutic. Getting some stuff off the chest.
Yeah, and as always, before we pop over to the teachable moment, as always, TDU crew, listeners, viewers, join the discourse. What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? Maybe we've missed something, so
ask us questions, whatever.
Sure. Yeah, please do.
All right, on your school holidays, what do you got for us?
Okay, this is the season ending, and it's kind of a good thing to build on after what we're just talking about. It's a little longer than normal, so apologies, but I think it's necessary. After a loss like this, the critiques are going to come in waves from everyone, from us, from the media, from our fans, from inside, outside. And let's be real, they should, okay? Questioning the decisions, the execution, and even Herbert's performance isn't just fair, it is necessary. Accountability, I believe, is what fuels progress. But here's the thing. Questioning the team doesn't mean abandoning the faith. It's not a binary thing. It means demanding better while trusting that Harbaugh and Ortiz are the right people to deliver it. The loss stings because we know this team had the talent to go further, especially against the Texans, perhaps. It's frustrating because we've seen what Herbert can do and we know what he's capable of so much more. And yes, the play calling, the offensive line, the defense, all of it is up for criticism. But if you zoom out, this isn't necessarily a failure. It's just a reminder of how much work there is left to do. Harbaugh is a coach who thrives in these moments. He's been through the fire before, rebuilding programs and teaching teams how to win. Ortiz isn't just filling a roster. He's crafting a culture that can sustain success. We've seen enough evidence of that. These are the people you want when the noise gets loud and the critics get sharper. They won't ignore the flaws. They'll face them head on, I'm sure of that, because that's what good leaders do. So yes, let's all ask the tough questions. Let's demand answers. But let's also hold on to the belief that this loss doesn't define the Chargers era under the Harbaugh regime. It's a chapter in a much bigger story, one that is still being written. It's earned, and it's earned especially through moments like this. The road forward isn't about perfection. It's about resilience, I think, right now. It's about Herbert stepping up, the team rallying together, and the fans staying invested even when it's hard. This is how champions are forged, not in the highs, but in how they respond to the lows. So brace yourself for the critiques, embrace the tough conversations, and remember, the best stories always have setbacks before the triumph. Class dismissed for 2025. Namaste.
Nice one, Jackie boy. And on that... Thanks to all the TDU crew for joining us week in, week out throughout the season. Nice to do one extra ep this year as we made the playoffs. The season's done. So the off season is here. We're going to take a week or two off and aim for a bit of a season 2024 roundtable with our good buddy Kyle D, probably in the Pro Bowl week before Championship Sunday. As I said before, join the discourse, ask us some questions. We'll happily do a little bit of a TDU mailbag coming up to, you know, thoughts on the year before, on the year that's passed and looking ahead. That's what we're here for now. So we made the playoffs, guys. That's the bottom line. Like,
it's impressive. Tape dog time. It's tape dog time. Too early for tape dog.
Hey, I'm already getting into the centers, boys. I've already got my pick that who should we take in the second. So, I'll leave Jack that Reed. Until our round table.
Hobart.
Jack Reed. Hobart. A cerebral, fast-moving, fleet-footed young man.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what's your little rap? What's the rap on you?
Me? Culture guy.
It's not fleet-footed.
Supportive guy. Hey, as I said, on the basketball court, ex-basketball player, have great footwork, knows how to move their body in space, aggressive when need to be, can protect the quarterback, cerebral, knows maths, knows English, can speak.
We'll call audibles when the quarterback didn't ask for it.
Correct, yeah. We'll call out the wrong protection at the wrong time, all that
kind of
stuff.
We were all budding flowers 20 years ago. I'll take your word for it, though. All right, that'll do it for us, I think, tonight, guys. Thanks very much. Yep. Take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time on the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Hooray.
Thanks, guys. Hooray. Bye.
Good night to all!